Support for this podcast comes from Facebook. Running a business in 2020 is more challenging than ever. That's why many small business owners are turning to Facebook tools. Owners like Manuel Bucio, founder of Mexican dessert shop Raspachos. When in-person ordering became complicated, he simplified the process with the Shop Now button. When the rest of the world stopped, Manuel had the tools to keep going. Connect to the customers you're looking for with Facebook tools. Visit facebook.com/smallbusiness.
Welcome to The John Roa Show, a production of iHeartRadio and Roa Media Works. This is Leading from Home, a special limited series where I'm checking in with leaders and entrepreneurs from across the country on how they're dealing with the coronavirus pandemic. It's Wednesday, May 13th. It's now been 63 days since the pandemic began. Those of us who are leading, whether that's an organization, a corporation, or a family, have been tested by the coronavirus in ways that we could not have imagined just a few months ago. When the government issued stay-at-home orders and most employees were forced to work remotely, leaders had to adapt or be left scrambling to survive. Leaders obviously aren't immune to stress. They're worrying, along with the rest of us, about their health and the safety of loved ones and colleagues, about job loss, school closures, and the uncertainty about what the future may hold. There's no playbook for how to maintain your mental health during a pandemic, and people are obviously struggling. The Disaster Distress Helpline, a federal crisis hotline run by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, reported a 338% increase in call volume from February to March. Amid all this uncertainty, we do know one thing, that building resilience will help you get through this emotional roller coaster that's been triggered by the pandemic. To learn some ways to do that, I brought my friend, Courtney Seard, on the show today to share her perspective on resilience. Courtney's been through a lot and yet persevered to build a very successful career. She's one of the country's most in-demand executive coaches, having worked with everyone from professional athletes to actors to C-suite executives from corporate giants like Microsoft and AT&T. On this episode, we discuss the importance of managing expectations, some ways to navigate life and business, especially through these very tough times. I was thinking about how we met, and I think that our our friendship has been so hilarious because we met, what, 7 years ago? 6 years ago?
Has it been that long?
I think it's been, I mean, I was running the company.
It probably has been, yeah.
I was running the company. I was probably 2013.
It was Kevin's bachelor party, wasn't it?
Is that when we met? So that would have been.
I met you guys on the Sunday of Kevin's bachelor party. Everyone had left and it was just you and Kevin. I'd flown in from New York because I'd been in New York for about like a month. And I was meeting my homegirl and she was so hammered. But I wanted to stay out and Jared Garcia introduced us and that's how we met.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just hysterical because we became friends in Vegas. We used to run around that city being complete animals. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, life kind of goes on. And then we both kind of pop up and you're doing like major TED Talks and coaching global CEOs. And I'm writing a book and doing a podcast. It's been a very funny trajectory of our friendship.
It definitely has. And I think the interesting thing is that it's just been a friendship. Like many times we had no idea what we did. We just knew that we got along together and we really enjoyed each other. And we had a lot of really fun, crazy times together. So,
and we also talked a lot about life, right? I think we also connected a lot about our shared experiences and just, you know, crazy stories and stuff we've been through and adversity And I think that's a definite connective tissue that we found. And it's also what you are helping to support people in, from a business perspective on now, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, we did have a lot of intense conversations, especially as you were going through your transition. And it was just interesting to kind of see you morph and change as well as me going through my transition and morphing and changing. And it was always kind of like a nice point to, we went from a point of always kind of seeing each other very frequently to there being gaps of a couple of years. But then every time we kind of picked up, it was like riding a bike.
Yeah.
And yeah, I definitely am in the thick of it, helping a lot of business leaders as well as your everyday individual deal with where we are in this new world we are living in.
You know, I know you very well. We've hung out countless times and talked countless times, but I've probably never asked you the question, because to your earlier point that we've, you know, this has been a real friendship and it has never been about who we are and what we do, but I've probably never asked you the question, what do you do?
Yes. Oh, okay. So what I do is I am a performance coach and I am a leadership training facilitator. So I'm a coach, and some people say life coach. Absolutely. Your business is a part of your life. And I also generally help people focus on mindset. So my background is business operations training. I used to do operations for startups in Seattle and tech. And then after one of those sold, I went back into doing some virtual operations stuff. And about 7 years ago, I realized that it wasn't about knowledge. It was about behavior. That there were certain things that I wanted to change and shift in my life that I'd read all the books and I knew I wanted to do, but there was something in me that wasn't shifting. And it was the same thing in the business sector where I would come and give these people great advice and they were so eager to change. And I'd come back and no one had done any of the change, and it became very frustrating. And it led me to understanding and researching human behavior and mindset. And I went down a rabbit hole of studying neuro-linguistic programming and further picking up my study of hypnosis and really wanting to understand behavioral change and learning. And here I am. I started to combine coaching with consulting. And it was interesting. About 7 years ago, there really wasn't a lexicon for what I did. And then the show Billions popped. And then people were like, oh my goodness, that's what you do. Because a lot of the individuals that I work with are in finance. So I do have to give the show Billions like a great prop, because it was able to give individuals an actual like a face and a name to what it is that I did and how I showed up professionally.
Right. And you're speaking of the woman. What's her character name in Billions?
Her name is Wendy Rhodes.
Wendy Rhodes. That's it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great analogy and a great descriptor for what you do, because it is difficult to grasp when you just describe it, right? I mean, to help people and coach them and focus on performance, but then to see, you know, and I think what they did a great job with in that show was to demonstrate her importance to that company, potentially one of the most important people in the entire multi-billion dollar hedge fund that Billions, you know, fictionalized. And is that kind of how you see your role and importance, you know, not in a braggadocious way, but just from an importance in the things that you focus on with your clients and your companies?
Absolutely. And I think that it's also giving individuals the ability to see what they don't generally see. A lot of leaders, a lot of entrepreneurs, they are great at what it is that they do. That's driving their results, pushing things forward, moving forward. And sometimes their unique ability isn't describing that or giving that description to the people that they work for, or actually having some type of compassion or heart and meaning for what the actual individual doing the work is going through. So I believe that it's my job and my role to kind of tap them on the shoulder and let them know that it's bigger than them and that they can do things the way they used to be able to be done, or they can do things better. And I believe that we're all here to innovate and to grow and to do better than the previous generation. And what seems to always be missing in business is the idea that people talk about outcomes. And it's usually dollars and cents, but people drive that outcome. And generally, we don't think about the people behind the driving of the outcome, how they're thinking, how you speak to them, what are their values, how are they motivated? And generally, a leader leads and speaks to individuals from where they are and what their passion points are. And a lot of times, in the beginning of a company, yes, everyone's gung-ho, but at a certain point, it's always that moment where the gallows does not like the leader, and they kind of like are mumbling, and it's this tension and friction. And I'm there to make sure that doesn't happen, because it doesn't have to be a pain point if you're looking for it.
Right. Now, innovating, growing, you know, being a good leader is difficult in the best of times. It's really freaking difficult during a global pandemic. And I'm sure that your business has got more intense. Well, I know that we talked about it a couple weeks ago, but this is a time when someone like you, you know, fundamentally seems even more important than normal. So what has your last 8 weeks looked like? What's changed for you? What have you observed? What have you learned? You know, what can you share from the lens that you have as an inside track to powerful people and important people making big decisions and that have big impacts, you know, that are far further than them as individuals? Over the last weeks, what can you tell us about that?
What I've really noticed is, I'm sure you've heard of like the arc of change, where a change happens, you're shock and awe. Then you go into the bargaining and kind of like the denial piece.
It's like the stages then of grief, right? Like
the stages of grief. Stages of grief, stages of change. It's all the same because honestly, change is grief. But change is consistent. So what I realized is that a lot of individuals that I coached, they talked a good game, but when the pedal hit to the metal, they weren't really ready to actually enact what they said they were.
Right.
So that was very interesting to see. And also looking at a lot of individuals who really just wanted things to go back to normal and bargaining with, it's going to go back to normal, it's going to be okay, and them not being honest and truthful with themselves. And then therefore that lack of honesty and truthfulness with themselves then bled out into a crumbling of leadership, a crumbling of belief, a crumbling in trust.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, more than anything, haste makes waste. We really don't know anything. And what we do know is that the science behind it is it's going to take time to get a vaccine. And up until then, everything else is all speculation. So how do you move forward when a lot of the unknown is what causes the unconscious mind and our bodies to have stress, is when we don't know, right?
Right. Well, the actual definition of anxiety is the fear of the unknown, right?
Exactly. And there's a ton of that out there. But what do you know? What are the things that you can control? What is close to you and what can you do? And the one thing that a leader can control is the emotion that the people that they're feeling, that it's around them and how they're leading them and speaking to them. I've really pushed back on people talking about productivity, people talking about bottom line, and people talking about goals. And more have tried to get my individuals to talk about what's important to you. How are you feeling? What are you doing? How can we be there for you? Because you're not going to get good results and good output if people don't feel safe. It goes back to that Maslow hierarchy, mm-hmm. right? And if people don't feel safe, they're not going to trust you. And if you're pushing them for outcome, and that's your safety level, that's where you go to get safety, is to try to get control.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no control here. And the best thing that you honestly can do is really check in with your people. Because once you find out where their values are, what's important to them, what matters to them, you can speak to them in that language, and then you can motivate them. Then you can talk to them about resilience. I think that companies should be teaching resilience to people. It's a muscle, like confidence. You don't have it overnight, and you don't just read it in a book. You have to apply it. Give people that space to kind of like grieve. Give them that space to heal, and then set a date of, okay, this is where we are now. This is where we're going to go.
Right.
And also look at the fact that, you know, the things that we all valued in January and our goals are not the same.
Right.
Your company's goals and values aren't the same. So there's no problem with actually sitting down and asking your people what's important to you, what brings you heart and matter, and then resetting all of your goals and values. And I think that once people can lead that way, and when I've gotten feedback from the leaders after they've done that, everyone seems to be a little bit more open. Conversations are a bit more raw. Things have slowed down, but the quality of work is improving.
Right.
So it may not be as fast and as speedy. The work is getting done. They're checking in. They're giving everyone and each other grace. And instead of them just rebounding, they're actually moving forward, because there's a difference between being resilient and bouncing back, but you don't want to have a situation just bounce you back to where you were. You want to have a situation take you and propel you forward.
It's super interesting. And you know, one aspect that you just hit on is this concept of resilience. And I've been lucky to talk to all these leaders over the last 2 months, and from all walks of life and different, you know, industries and ages and levels of experience and levels of adversity. And there's a trend that I started to catch on to pretty quickly. And that is, every leader I talk to has a sense of focused optimism, meaning that no one's like, ah, fuck, this, the world's gonna end, nothing matters. Like, everyone is looking forward. They're looking to get through this in the best way possible and lead through the best of their qualities. But there's a big difference between certain leaders I talk to that just have tenured resilience. Like, they've just been through a lot. You know, like, I talked to a couple of guys here in New York who've like, yeah, we led this company through the dot-com crash and then 9/11 and then this and that. And so they're like, yeah, this really sucks, but like, we've been here before, maybe a different flavor of it, but like, we know how this path goes. You know, to younger entrepreneurs and leaders who were kind of like, yeah, this is a brand new thing. And you sense an entirely different kind of concept, level of empathy, et cetera. And I almost started to equate it mentally to like trees in a forest, right? Like, you have the older ones and the younger ones. And the older ones were like, I've seen floods and I've seen frost and I've seen winters and I've seen summers and I'm still here, to the younger ones who are just kind of popping up. What do you find in terms of the resilience that you can't teach, that you can't, you know, read a book on or talk to someone like you about, that just comes with leading across adversity, across decades, different to younger entrepreneurs? And then on that thought, if there's a younger person listening in who's like, yeah, I haven't lived out those experiences, how would you differently guide or coach them on how to get through an episode like this?
I mean, everything is experience, and I would call it muscle memory, right? Like, if I've done this 100,000 times, it's going to be easier for me to get up and do it. I started my business in the beginning of like 2008, the big bust. So I know what it's like to not only have a business, start it during a recession. I'm 43. I've been through a lot more. And some of my clients who've had resiliency or in business or had a tougher upbringing in life, they've just been able to reframe. They've had that skill. Now, if you're younger and this is your first big moment, okay, welcome to the big show. Right. It's kind of like what Mike Tyson said. You don't know. Everyone thinks they can take a punch until you get hit in the face, right? Well, this is when you get to be who you always said you wanted to be. And how do you do that? You get up every morning and you show up and you keep pushing through. And you might hurt and there may be pain and you keep going through and you stop and you don't burn yourself out. You know your pain points. But you look for the challenges, you don't run away from them. So in anything that's overwhelming, you break it down. The mind does best in 90-day quadrants, in 90-minute segments. And if you focus on an activity and you work through it 22 minutes without interruption, you'd be amazed at what you get through. I say set up small pieces of challenges and lead into them. It could even be as, I'm going to focus 5 minutes more on that task that I don't like to do. Find the thing that is the hardest thing that you hate to do the most in your business and do it first. You're not going to have it all in one day.
Right.
Tiny pieces, slow and steady wins the race.
Do you think every single person in the world is capable of what you just described?
Absolutely. It's a certain level, but resilience is a trait, it's a state, and it's a skill. And you can build a skill. A state is something that you put yourself into. We've all been resilient. There has all been a moment when you've tried over and over again. Everyone has been resilient because you learned how to walk.
What about leadership, though? Where resiliency comes into leadership, like that transition to what you're saying is that you can develop this. Is there some, you know, predistinguished qualities that make somebody more capable of leadership, or is that purely a trained skill?
I think that certain individuals are born better at certain things than others, right? We all have our unique abilities. And then again, you can train leadership. I tell a lot of individuals when they are hired for a role or promoted to be a manager, you were good at doing that job. That does not mean you're good at managing people.
Right.
Leadership is understanding communication. It's understanding how to motivate people, how to be around individuals, how to manage yourself. And a lot of people don't train for that. They may say, oh, I read a book or I did this and then therefore I am a good leader. No. That's an everyday thing that you work on. So the individuals that are your best leaders, you will find out that they have mentors, they have coaches, they put themselves into situations where they're leading outside of work that's not connected to money. And they also are being led by other people, because a good leader knows how to be led.
Now, I have two questions where this goes. And one is the unpopular opinion that everyone isn't cut out for this, right? And I think you see it a lot in my industry, in tech. And mm-hmm. a lot of these kids who, they have a good idea. They build an app. They create some service, right? And then all of a sudden, they're handed tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. And then they have thousands of employees. And they're like, oh, you're now a leader. And it's like, well, wait, where is the correlation between somebody who has an interesting technological idea and now being in charge of tens of thousands of people's livelihoods?
Exactly.
And you're seeing a lot of breakdown, right? And this is where the WeWorks and and all these different horror stories that, you know, quickly turn into documentaries and then movies and then whatever books, you know, this whole trend that we're seeing, which is to me just mortifying, right? But it seems like it is founded in that basis that just because you're the inventor, the person who started it, you're now, you know, expected to lead. And that seems like an absolutely ridiculous expectation, right? Why would those two things equally or automatically be the same thing and expected from the same person? So why do you think that is a trend that's happening? Why haven't the people who are investing and backing these companies identified this and stopped it from happening? And if you were focused on that industry, what might you do to stop that trend from continuing to reform?
Well, first and foremost, a lot of investors, one, have never run a business. They've never worked at a business. So they don't understand the fundamentals of business. They understand the fundamentals of investing. And having a good idea does not make you a leader. It makes you a good idea person. And I think that a lot of leaders don't know how to let go of the vine. And we had a great success story with Bill Gates and also with Steve Jobs. And all of those things, and at a time also Jeff Bezos, right? They're early, them leading. Everyone who wants to be an entrepreneur, they look at those guys, right? And they were unicorns in the aspect that they were able to do that. However, how much help did they get? How many great CEOs did they have? And how often did they let go of the vine? Oh. And I think that you need to start thinking. What we have here now is people looking at what other individuals did and then blindly doing it and not thinking critically down the road and looking at systems and structures and understanding people. And I think that you're starting to have more and more companies do this, but a lot of venture firms don't have a people person or don't have a person that understands behavior and psychology.
Well, this is really, important.
Or they're not strong enough to say, leader, you need to leave now.
This is really important. And this might come down to the definition of a leader because, you know, you mentioned Steve Jobs. Let's use him. He built mm-hmm. what is now either the single most or one of the most valuable companies in history. A true innovator, inventor, creator, but by all accounts was a fucking asshole, right? I mean, it would just crush people that disappointed him, and it would set expectations that were literally impossible to hit. But what it ultimately did is cause people to work harder and be more cultish and follow, and that's why they did what they did. But does that make him a good leader?
It made him a good business leader to create a product. It did not make him a good people leader.
This is where I want to
hit. Definition.
This is it.
Right. It's the definition of what leader is. It kind of goes back into Bill Clinton. This is when language becomes so important. Like I always ask my individual, what does leadership mean to you? You know, what do these things mean to you? Because to me, language of leadership means I'm a good person. I'm a good steward of people. And I therefore holistically then manage my business. And I believe that managing people and managing them well and caring about their bottom line will allow us to have a good output and then we'll do well for the business.
Right.
But there's certain companies who don't believe that. Like, if you know individuals who work at Amazon, they don't necessarily believe in work-life balance. You work, work, work. And your balance is the money and the stock option.
Now, is that okay? And this is where I'm getting at, because there seems
it's okay if you decide to listen. I am a firm believer. We are a capitalist society and we're free market. And if you know that this is what you're going to get yourself into, that's what you signed on to. So yeah, then you need to hire people like me and make sure you're doing good nutrition and getting, you know, using all of the hacks to perform. And you've got to decide, is the money, fame, or money, business, yada, 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 worth my literal personal health,
right?
People burnout.
Yeah. And we agree on this. And this is where I've had a lot of debate and conversation because, and I write about this in my book quite a bit. It's probably one of the points that I harp on the most, which is, you know, if you were to look at this kind of new agey definition of leader, which I think is not deeply appropriate, which is like to be the people person, to be like the all hugging, all, you know, accommodating person who's looking out for everyone's well-being and being highly empathetic.
But that's not a leader either.
Right. But that seems to be where a lot of people are pushing leaders today is like, you know, that needs to be your primary and the business is secondary. And I look back at my company, you know, and you know, Kevin Larash, who was my COO, and I was more, let's call it Steve Jobsy, right? Like people were mortified to bring me something because if it wasn't 100% perfect, if it was 99.9, they would get crushed. I actually have a line in my book where I say, I care more about Indonesian politics than I do the feelings of my team. And the reality was that's because I was dead focused on building a business. But then I had a guy, Kevin, who was 100% focused on keeping people healthy, happy, productive, et cetera. And I self-evaluate in my book. I say, was I a good leader? And that's, I think, going to be a debate when people read my behavior and see what I did. Is that leadership? And is that still fair to be called that? Because I do believe it is. And that's a dynamic you can create. And that's what we were known for.
I believe you were a good leader because you brought someone like Kevin in and you let Kevin do his job. You let him check you when need be. You let him advocate for his people. You were a good leader because you knew where you were not strong. Like, you don't have to be everything to everyone. You were like, yo, I'm not good with people. You didn't force people to deal with you, but you did exactly what the goal and the vision and the mission of your company was. You succeeded. So yes, you were successful in that aspect. And you brought someone else in who you let go of the vine and you allowed them to do it.
I couldn't agree more. And it's something that I look forward to discussing more, you know, once the book is out there, because I think it's an unpopular point of view. And I think that people are increasingly less kind of, you know, conducive to the forms of leadership and why people like Steve Jobs exist. Like, to me, I'm like, he needed to do that or else Apple wouldn't have put out that level of perfection. Now, did he fail by not putting people under him who like a Kevin, you know, who took care of the emotional half of the business? Then sure, we can look back and retroactively say that. But I think that we might be losing, you know, or scaring people away from being the best leaders that they can. And it's a great conversation and one that when we're back to normal, when you're back in New York, we'll get back in the podcast this summer when the main show's out. And we're going to talk a lot about this because it's super interesting.
Most definitely.
Well, good. I have a feeling that people that are going to listen to this are going to want to know how to get in touch with you. So what is the best way to contact you from a business perspective?
You can contact me via email. It's Courtney@CourtneySeard.com. And that's SEARD.
Awesome. And that's your social media as well, Courtney Seard, right?
Yeah. @CourtneySeard is my social media. And then if you want to check on Instagram, it's actually @TheRisePlanner.
At the Rise Planner, which is your new product, which I got to get one of. And quickly tell us about that. I just saw you posting about it.
A project journal. Then every quarter, it's a 90-day vision action planner, which allows you to pick an area of your life and get very granular on what's important to you and then set goals. And then in the back is your weekly, monthly planner where you can track your self-care. You can track your habits. As well as your typical day-to-day activities. And I created it because a lot of my clients, I had them using like a journal, a planner, and some of them, they're journaling when they send it to me because when I work with my clients for the first 30 days, I have daily contact and I'd be reviewing their writing and they weren't getting the prompts correctly. So I realized that I could put something together that was more concise, backed by science, that had been getting the results my clients had needed for the past years. And put it in one area where people who couldn't work with me or didn't want to work with me, but get a taste of what it was like to get your goals very quickly and easily using Mind Science, they could do it. So it's a 3-in-1 system. It's The Rise Planner at theriseplanner.com. And you can get one at www.theriseplanner.com. Thanks
love
for
it.
The plug, John. I appreciate it.
No, of course. I love the idea and I realized we hadn't really talked about it. So it's great to hear more about it. I look forward to getting one. And it's great to talk to you. I hope you're continuing to do well. And it's been way too long since we've been able to sit down. So hopefully.
Well, I will be in New York in July.
Boom. There we go.
Some filming stuff that I'm going to be doing, so we can definitely touch base before then. But I'll see you in July.
That's perfect. You're the best. Talk to you soon.
You are the best. Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. A big thanks to Courtney for being on the show today. I really can't wait to continue that discussion about leadership later on in the podcast when we relaunch this summer. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe, leave a review, or share with a friend. 100% of the profits from this limited series will be donated to charities that are helping people through the global pandemic. And if you're currently leading from home, or if you're an entrepreneur who wants some advice or to talk through something, then I want to hear from you. Head over to roa.com/podcast. That's roa.com/podcast for ways to connect with me. Or hit me on social media at John Roa. That's J-O-H-N-R-O-A. The John Roa Show is a production of iHeartRadio and Roa Media Works. For more podcasts from us, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows. A special thanks to my producers, Jordan Gaspore, here at the show, and Tyler Klang, over at iHeartRadio. We'll be back with you on Friday for the last episode of this limited series. After that, we're going to take a hiatus as we prepare to launch the main John Roa Show this summer with iHeartRadio. Thank you so much for your support. And in the meantime, please stay safe out there.
What's up? I am Machine Gun Kelly, and look, I know Halloween is going to suck this year because there's no trick-or-treating and all that, but I've got a treat. There's a musical podcast that I made with my friends 24K Golden, Ian Dior, and Dana Dentata, and Satan. Well, Satan's not my friend, but Tommy Lee is, and Tommy Lee is playing Satan. But don't just take it from me. Tell him, Satan.
Thanks, dude. It feels great to be playing Satan on this podcast. Listen to Halloween in Hell on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or whatever you get your podcasts on.